My name's James and I'm an alcoholic. Sober today thanks to this fellowship and the power that's in these rooms. That's fine. Yeah. Good morning. A microphone and an iPod. It's wonderful. I'm James. I'm an alcoholic. This is not how I plan to spend my Sunday morning. I'm a loner still, although I'm usually reluctant to come to things like this, when I actually get here and make the effort and get here, I actually enjoy them. I came here yesterday only because my sponsor wanted to be here, and actually quite enjoyed it, and I thought, well, I'll come back on Sunday. As I was walking out last night, David said, are you coming back tomorrow? And I said, yeah. And he said, oh good, I have a job for you. And it's been what I try to do in AA is say, when I'm asked to do something for AA, I try and say yes. It's one of those practical bits of advice that I craved when I first came to AA. How do you get sober? How do you hand over? How do you do this and that? And it all seemed to be sort of pretty wafty, you know, warm and fuzzy, touch and feely kind of stuff, which I didn't really relate to. I think of myself as a practical person. You know, I like doing things. I sometimes think I'm a human doing rather than a human being. I find it very difficult to talk about me. I find it easy to talk about things that I do. I mean, for example, at the moment I'm just been engaged in... my car is celebrating its 21st birthday this year, and it's getting a tad rusty because I live near the beach. So I've renovated a 20-year-old scooter and getting that licensed and registered and all that kind of thing. It's been great, you know. My next project... If I don't have a project, I'm not happy. My next project is an electric bicycle. I have the bits I think living in Melbourne and with a car is very expensive and public transport's all well and good. But I need to be doing things, you know. And when I first came to AA, I looked at the steps. When I first came to AA, I looked around and I was horrified, you know. Someone said, you know, AA is daggy. It's not as daggy as it used to be. But the first meeting, perhaps I've changed. The first meeting I went to was in a tongue and groove, weatherboard hall around the back of a weatherboard church, calcimine pink, with cigarette smoke down to here, full of people who were very nice and very friendly, but I didn't relate to it at all because they drank beer and they drank in pubs and they worked for the public service and I didn't do any of that, you know. And I looked at the banners and they were yellow like a kipper from all the cigarette smoke, and I read some of the literature and it really needed rewriting. I'm a graphic designer by profession. And I looked at the banners and I looked at the presentation and I thought, you need someone like me to smarten you up. That's if I agreed to take you on. Like others here, I was an expert in the self-help book department. I still walk into Borders and gravitate towards the self-help books. But I don't buy them like I used to, but I remember when I moved house one time, when my first marriage broke down, I took a load of stuff to the tip and I had a large green garbage bag full of self-help books and tapes. You know, I bought... Something was wrong, you know. I bought my first self-help book when I was 16. You know. I mean, for me, alcohol was the anaesthetic. So I looked at the steps when I actually... started reading them, I was horrified because of the God word. You know, I'd given God away when I was 10 years old because the things they talked about in church didn't make sense to me. You know, there were contradictions in logic in the whole business. You know, if if Jesus died for my sins, why did I still have to be good? You know, stuff like that. And no clergyman could ever answer me satisfactorily. And so I thought, well, you know, part arrogance, part basic logic. You know, I'm responsible for myself. Anyone who needs a God, good luck to them. But in my view, it's weakness. You know, I'm the captain of my ship and the master of my fate, and it's down to me. And if you can shift the responsibility onto a third party, well and good, but it wasn't on for me. And, you know, when I, as the captain of my ship and the master of my fate, I navigated my way all the way up Shit Creek, eventually. But, so I looked at the 12 steps, and if you look at the 12, when I looked at the 12 steps, 7 of the 12 steps mention God or matters spiritual or higher powers. And I thought, well, that might be okay for you. Maybe there's something in there that I could use. You know, forget about the God business. But if you look at, you know, if you knock out 7 of the 12 steps, there's not much left. It's like, you know, trying to climb a ladder with half the rungs. And so, you know, I went off looking for an easier, softer way. Not an easier, softer way. I'm quite prepared to work and I'm quite resourceful. And I tried all kinds of things and I couldn't find anything that worked for me. You know, I knew what my problem was. I didn't know what to do about it. And I got sicker and sicker. You know, my drinking was a downward spiral. I kept doing the same stuff and it kept getting worse. And I wound up back in detox, where I'd been several times, had pancreatitis, and in a halfway house, where they made me go to meetings. And that's what saved me. They made me go to meetings. And while I was there, I was safe. And I kept looking at the steps, and I heard people say, I read the steps, I didn't understand them. And I thought, well, what's wrong with you? You know, I could look at the steps and I knew what the words meant. I prided myself on my vocabulary. But it was still sort of double Dutch. And it took a long time, really, for it to sink in. The other thing that made the big change for me was having a system. I talk about this a fair bit because it was crucial to me. A guy got up and put the steps in terms I could understand at the time. He said, every day I do 6 things. And I started doing the 6 things, and I, even being ever so slightly obsessive compulsive, I made up a little chart. Days of the week, 6 things, and I ticked them off, you know, and I could see progress, you know, like, I mean, practical stuff, you know. I love the practical stuff. I'd go to meetings and they'd say, hand it over, and I'd say, well, how do you do that? How do you hand over? They said, say the words, say a prayer. And I said, well, okay, but then what? What do you do for the other 23 hours of the day, you know? But they'd say things like, sobriety is in the first 3 rows. And that clicked. I didn't want to be in the first 3 rows. You know, I'm one of those kids at school where when they opened the door at the beginning of the year, foom, I was off to the back row, you know. And I remember in detox, we had meetings in the detox where I was in Sydney. And we all the detox guys, straight for the back row, mutter amongst ourselves. But this guy said, sobriety is in the first 3 rows. And in the first 3 rows, you're closer to the person who's speaking, you can hear them better, and you don't hear the guys in the back rows going mutter, you know. I was petrified of being picked, you know, but it's part of the process. I liked, you know, practical stuff like the person who said to me, when AA asks you to do something, say yes. Because my natural thing as a loner, as a you know, self-contained stainless steel seamless unit of one, is to do my own thing. But saying yes to when I'm asked has opened me up to a lot of vital experience for me. You know, it's done me the world of good. You know, and I'm very grateful for that. So getting to step 8. When I looked at the 12 steps, some of them I didn't relate to at all. There was this warm and fuzzy, touchy-feely stuff. And then there were 4 steps that made sense. There were the steps where you do stuff. 4 and 5, 8 and 9, you actually do stuff. You don't make decisions, or you don't come to believe. You actually do stuff. You write stuff down, you share it with someone, you make a list, you make an ends. And that was okay. And I still have problems with the warm and fuzzy touchy-feely steps like 6 and 7, and it's good to hear the previous speakers because it gave me a fresh perspective on things. But I did my 4th and 5th, and I found that liberating, not only because it was a bit of house cleaning, but because I felt I was doing something about my recovery. You know, in early sobriety, all us newcomers used to sort of, he's done step 4. You know, wow. And step 5, he's going to do step 5. You know, and step 4 and 5 were terrifying because I had to confront stuff about me. You know, I am not comfortable sort of digging up the past when I behaved badly and did shitty things to other people, and acknowledging it was not my idea of fun at all. My sponsor said, you need to do it. And when I did it the first time, I felt like I'd actually done something meaningful in my recovery. You know, I went to meetings and I didn't pick up a drink, and I did service work and stuff like that. But I'd actually done step 4 and 5, and it was a great sense of achievement. You know, 6 and 7, there's those wafty ones again. I did the best I could. And the seven-step prayer is something I do regularly, hoping that it will rub off. But 8 and 9, made a list of persons I had. I'd harmed. I'd done this as part of 4 and 5, so I could go back to that. And the big book and some of the reading that I've done, cramming last night for this morning, reminded me that really just reading my fourth step isn't enough, because I don't know about you, but my recovery is a work in progress, as are the steps that I work on. I've not, even though I tried the first time, I haven't done my definitive fourth and fifth, and never will. And in recovery, I've realized down the track that there are people that I harmed that I hadn't even realized back in early sobriety, you know, when all the fog was thick and I was just stumbling along and doing the best I could. Case in point, my daughter. You know, I have two children, and they are the light of my life. And my daughter, I have a son and a daughter, and father-daughter thing is usually very special, and it is for me. And I didn't realize until last year, 12 years on in sobriety, that I owed her amends. I thought that I'd done the best I could under the circumstances, a broken marriage, a broken home. I'd never forgot her birthday. I always drew a birthday card for her. I always was there when she needed me. I helped her with homework. I'd done all the stuff I thought a father should do. And she said something a year ago, and I realized I owed her amends. And I had to do it. I couldn't live with myself. I did it the next day. You know, fortunately she was here in Melbourne because she's been travelling. So making a list means refreshing the list that I made in the step 4. Becoming willing to make amends to them all, the second part of step 8. Becoming willing to actually confront these people that I treated badly was daunting. Way up the top of my list was one of my employers, from whom I'd stolen some photographic equipment. And I was in recovery thoroughly ashamed of this, and also aware that if I made amends to him, he had the opportunity to take steps. You know, he could charge me with theft, and rightly so, you know. But I, that was high on my list because it was sort of practical. the subtle stuff, the touchy-feely, warm and fuzzy stuff, like my daughter, I could only deal with later on. But becoming willing was difficult. I mean, I've always liked what Lee Parry from Brighton used to say, you know, you have to be willing. For me, you know, honesty, open-mindedness and willingness are the three ingredients. And for me, willingness is probably the thing I need the most. What with willingness, the rest is possible. But Lee Parry used to say, you need to be willing. And if you're not willing, you need to be willing to pray for the willingness. And if you're not ready to do that, then you have to pray to be willing to be willing. You know, it sort of made a sort of convoluted sense to me. And just praying to be willing, it was a step forward. Anyway, my sponsor gave me some good advice. He said, before you make amends, run it past me. You know, and when I went to see this guy, that I'd stolen the equipment off, he said, I ran it past my sponsor, and he said, don't promise the world, don't promise them the earth, you know, don't commit yourself to something you can't fulfill, because when I actually went to see the guy that I'd had to make amends to, his response was fantastic. I mean, I'm talking about step nine now, that's the next speaker's province, but I was overwhelmed at the response of the people that I made amends to. They were so generous. And this guy said, just return it. No problem. That's fine. I never even knew. And I was so grateful. I was prepared to do anything. You know, if you need anything, just... And then my sponsor's words kicked in. You know, it wasn't appropriate that I promise away the rest of my life to someone in a fit of sort of spontaneous gratitude. So... yeah, it's like I say, 4 and 5, 8 and 9 steps that I liked because I could do things. You know, I still have problems with the other steps. As I say, recovery for me is a work in progress and a movable feast. My recovery is the reverse of my drinking. My drinking was a downward spiral. I kept doing the same things and stuff got worse. In recovery, it's an upward spiral. I keep doing the same things that I've learned in AA, and life continues to get better. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to speak here today, however unexpected. I'm very grateful to be sober. I love being sober, and it's a consequence of being in rooms like this with people like you, so thank you for being here.